Good evening. Good evening. Is everybody in? Is everybody in? How'd you like to hear a story? When you write a book, there are three perks. One, you get to say you wrote a book. And if you're lucky, the person you're talking to will go, ooh. And that feels good. Two, hopefully, and this is the one that everybody who writes a book deludes themselves into believing, hopefully that book will have an impact on someone. That word is vague on purpose, because the nightmare all too true most of the times is you write a book and it lands with what Art Spiegelman calls resounding indifference. And it has an impact on no one except you, and it's a negative impact. But you hope that you imagine some imaginary person, and you probably, they're probably slightly more attractive than you, probably slightly younger, and you imagine them saying, oh my God, blank book by you? Oh, I loved that. That's perk two, and it's largely an illusion. Perk three is actually quite real. There are places where if you are writing a book, it serves as a job qualification. And you can apply to these places, and these places exist to give you real estate and care and feeding, like you're a houseplant, to write your book. Or, in a larger sense, to produce your symphony or sculpt your piece of sculpture or make your film. They are called artist residencies. And strangely enough, they are mostly an American invention. There are 226 artist residencies in the United States alone. And those are places, like I said, where you get to go and you get to sit there and be an artist for 2 weeks. That sort of hopelessly indulgent thing could probably only have been invented in this country. I don't know, maybe Dubai will get to it in 10 years with all their loose oil money running around. Anyway. I, 2 years ago, got a contract to write a book, and I thought, well, I got perk one, and perk two is an illusion, so I'm not going to get too hung up on that. And then perk three, I'm going to make something out of perk three. So at age 38, I basically applied to college all over again. And I filled out my applications, and I talked about what I wanted to do during my time at residency, which was, yes, exactly like writing a college essay. And I talked about my process and my goals and my ambitions. And I submitted my PSAT scores. No, I'm just kidding. And I applied to six of these residencies. Now, why six? Why not? Why? It's not that applications are expensive or that you actually have to take the SATs. Why six? Because some of these places pride themselves on how out of step with reality in the present day they are. And you'll say, we here at the Briarwood artist industry pride ourselves on providing an environment for creativity since 1876, and as such, we have no running water. We have no internet access. In fact, we're all run on pumps operated by raccoons here at the Briarwood Artist Conflicts. Welcome you and your creativity here in 2013. I kind of stayed away from those. So of my six applications, I got into one. And thankfully, it was exactly the one I wanted to go to. It was the Ragdale Artist Colony in Lake Forest, Illinois. Now, Lake Forest is essentially suburban Chicago. It is about 40 minutes north of Chicago. It is a very posh town. And of course, my parents were the first to say, oh yeah, they didn't let Jews in there until 1972. I was thrilled. I practically came in holding a plate of knishes and doing the Hava Nagila. I'm like, here I am in Lake Forest. Bring it on. Saying I got into one is exaggerating a little bit. I basically got a call from the folks at Ragdale that said, we would like to give you a residency if you are okay with taking one in January. In Chicago. I'm from the Midwest, but I lived in California for 13 years. So I'm no fool. Yes, of course. And they're like, okay, January 20th, we will see you at Ragdale in Lake Forest, Illinois. And I showed up, and there was about 300 feet of snow on the ground. And it was the coldest I've ever seen, and my charming little room had a giant portal window next to the bed, which had no curtains and no insulation, and so I slept under this ice cube every night at my writer's, in my little writer's hut, in my little artist's hut. And the way this works is you all have your little rooms, and you go off and you work, but you all eat dinner together. There is one large communal dining table. It's very much like an English boarding school. And you all eat dinner together. And I was the first one to arrive, and I didn't know what to do. It was just before dinner, so I went upstairs, and I kind of puttered around my room for a little while. And then we all had dinner at the communal table, and I came downstairs, and a tall, glorious, long-haired, 24-year-old Korean man strides gallivantly in the room, plops down right next to me and goes, "Hello." And I said, "Hi. Hi." And he goes, "My name is Win Jo. Tell me about you." Not what's your name, not how'd you, tell me about you. And I said, "Hi, Win Jo. I'm Kevin, and I'm an author, and I'm doing this book." And he goes, "Ah. Now tell me about your process." And I'm like, "I got an appendix removed when I was 13, and I don't have wisdom teeth process." And I said, "Tell me about yours." And he said, "Oh, it's so wonderful. I live in this neighbor." He's a very, like, he was just a striking, dramatic guy. He was like 6'5" and had this long hair, and just he was born to be an artist. He would not have made it in the non-artist world. He was born to be an artist. And he just sat down and he goes, "Oh, it's just so wonderful. I live on the south side of Chicago, and my studio is about this big, and I'm a sculptor and a video installation artist. And I hear at Ragdale, we get a barn in the backyard that's like this big," and they weren't kidding. There was a barn in the backyard that was all his. And he had like, he just set up his bedroll in the corner, and he goes, "And I just spent all night in the studio creating and getting things ready, and I'm so excited." And he just looked at me. He just looked at me like a kid who had discovered his best friend. And I said, "A, I am so glad this guy, who I liked immediately, found a place where his creativity could reach its zenith." And I was so deeply embarrassed because I'm like, I have no process. I have no longing for a space where I can do this. I basically applied because it was perk number 3, and it was the one on the table that I could grab, and I felt ashamed at that point. I felt ashamed because I had nowhere near the joy and the appreciation that this guy had for what he had been given. And I finished my dinner quickly, and I went up to my room, and I just stayed there because I was too embarrassed to sit at the table anymore with anybody else. And gradually, I would come down the next day, and the next day I would come downstairs for breakfast and for lunch, and I would chat with the people who were there with me, my fellow resident artists. And they were all very nice people, but we would finish breakfast, and they would put the newspaper down, and they would say, "Gotta go to work," and they would rush off to their rooms. And eventually I was like, "I guess that's what I'm supposed to be doing too." And so I would go off to my room, and I would do 1 hour of work, and I would say, I don't understand what I'm doing here. I don't feel like I can call myself what these people, I've never called myself what these people call myself. And I felt like anyone who has an ounce of creativity has felt once in their life, many times in their lives, I felt like a fraud. And so I would do 1 hour a day. And then someone would come down the hall and say, "Anybody want to go for a walk?" And I would always say yes, because at least I can walk. I don't feel like a fraud walking. And I would chat with people. And they were all really nice. And I made friends, good friends. And they would say, and to the one, I would tell them what I was working on. And they would say, "I can't wait to read that." And I would say, I thought to myself, you know what? For nothing else, I don't care how I feel, I better get it done. I better get done so I feel like they have something to read when this is all said and done, because we're all going to go back to our normal lives at that point. So I would do 1 hour of work a day, and then two, and then three, and then four. And the third to last day we were there, the 7 of 9 days we were there, it had been announced on the third day that everybody was going to have to present a little bit of what they were working on. And I saved mine till the very end, so I could leave in a day or two if I felt like it was clear that I was pretending. And so I presented what I had worked on there, and I got exactly the same thing. I can't wait to read that. And so the 9th day came along, and I was almost there. I was almost there believing, on the day I was packing my suitcase and getting ready to go home, that I belonged there. And as I was doing that, as I was packing my suitcase, I realized I had left some stuff that I had brought on this little bookshelf right by my desk. And I reached down to get my stuff off the shelf, and I managed to knock over 2 or 3 spiral-bound notebooks that were on the shelf. I hadn't noticed them. In the 9 days I had been in that room, I hadn't noticed them. And I picked up the spiral-bound notebooks, and I realized that every person who would occupy that room as a resident had written something about their experience there. And that room had opened in 1972. 40 years of testimonials of, this is why I came, and this is what my experience was like. And yes, I felt like a fraud. Lots of them felt like just as I had felt. And I just sat there on the floor with my unpacked suitcase. And these notebooks spread out, and I just went over them and over them, listening to people's experience, how they got in touch with their own creativity, and how it seemed like a stranger who was visiting, and how they gradually got to know that person. And maybe what the real benefit of that kind of experience was is to see your creativity as not a stranger, maybe not a friend, but someone you know, and see not as strange, not as threatening, but at the very least familiar. And then I got to the end and I realized there were a couple of blank pages, and what I was supposed to do was put what had happened to me in there. And I just started to cry. I just started to cry. Because that's what I had been asked at dinner 9 days ago. What do you do? What is your process? I'm a writer. I write things. I create things. And that was the fourth perk that I didn't know about, that I had never understood, that you get to call yourself that. And it is not something you say to impress people. It is not an illusion. It is not a fraud. It is 100% real. Because you do it, and something comes out of it, and it means something to you. Hopefully it means something to someone else. But it is not a stranger, and even if it's not a friend, it's familiar, because it's you. Thanks.